And as he went looking for Georgia, so Big Jim went looking for him. You said, Big Jim. You, the very man I've been looking for. The cabin, where is it? Answer me, I say, answer me. Can't you speak, man? Tell me, where's the cabin? The cabin, where is it? At last I shall find my mountain of gold. To your feet, man, quick. You're coming with me. Take me to the cabin and I'll make you a millionaire in less than a month.
You're listening to the official podcast of the Old Hollywood Times, a news site dedicated to reporting on all things Hollywood, the Hollywood of 75 years ago, that is. I'm Wesley Embledge. Every week we're reporting on the news that was breaking and the films that were being released, with an added 3/4 of a century of hindsight. You just heard a clip from Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush, which you may also know is a silent film from 1925. Why, then, did that clip include Chaplin's voice? 75 years ago yesterday in 1942, Chaplin re-released the film, having re-edited it and added new music, narration, and sound effects. Today I'll talk with Chaplin biographer and archivist Jeffrey Vance about this often criticized re-release and discuss the differences between the two versions. We'll be back in just a moment with that conversation with Jeffrey Vance. Okay, so thank you so much, Jeffrey Vance, for talking to me today about The Gold Rush. I wanted to start out with just a pretty basic question. So if you're going to your television and you're sitting down and you want to watch The Gold Rush, which version do you personally prefer? Which version are you going to put in?
Let's see. Well, they're two different movies. I suppose. Exactly. I suppose I would watch the 1942 cut.
Okay, so why? Shorter. That is definitely a good motivation, for sure.
I prefer the 1942 cut because of the sharper visuals and it's cleaner. But it's two different movies, and most people prefer the 1925 cut. They're just two different films. One is longer. One is a true dramatic comedy, an epic length, as he originally released it in 1925. And then there's the reissue version of 1942 that's shorter, more of a storybook fable that he reworked for a modern audience, if you will.
Right. The way I see it, I feel like both have, each of them have like one really key strength and weakness that's kind of differentiates them for me. I think that the romance works actually a lot better in the 1942 version. I don't know how you feel, but I think the way that he simplifies some of the elements with the letter and things like that make the 1942 version work a lot better for me. But then the obvious downside, I think, to the 42 version is his narration, which I think is often distracting, particularly when it's not just him narrating, but he's creating voices for the characters on screen. I find that especially distracting, but I don't know how you feel about those two elements.
Most people are probably in agreement with you now in the 21st century. I think there's some context needed. I don't know if that helps the film at all, but it's not clear to modern ears, but Chaplin was greatly influenced by Robert W. Service, known as the Bard of the Yukon, and his first book, Songs of the Sourdough. And he emulates that melodramatic tone for his narration, particularly a poem called The Shooting of Dan McGrew. Now, this was taught in schools 100 years ago, 75 years ago. So it was not lost on contemporary audiences in 1942, but it seems completely lost to modern viewers. So they think that this narration is excessive and melodramatic. but it's in keeping with the Yukon story that he's telling. And I find it delightful. And it keeps the story going. But again, narration was considered a new idea to put to a silent film, to modernize it, if you will. But today, for 21st century audiences, that seems rather dated and not to anyone's wanting. So I'm in the minority, and I understand that. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, like the narration itself doesn't particularly bug me, and I think it actually works pretty well in a lot of sections. It's more when it goes from the narration to him specifically like reading lines for the characters, which, mm-hmm. you know, it's often not really matching up with what they're saying. Sometimes their mouths aren't even fully moving, and it's where it kind of crosses a line of like narration to something completely different. That's when it really ends up kind of throwing me off.
Well, that's your opinion, and you're entitled to it.
Sure.
Opinions aren't facts, and we could find 100 people that prefer the narrated version and 100 people that prefer the silent version. I mean, mm-hmm. we will not come to any definitive answer.
Sure.
It's to anyone's choice. The original question was simply, what would I watch? I would probably mm-hmm. put in the 42 cut. If I was in a theater, I would prefer watching the 1925 cut. I like that bigger epic, the dramatic, darker film as a big screen experience. But if I was watching it on television, as you asked, I would probably want a simpler, shorter experience, and I would watch the 1942 cut.
Mm-hmm. So going back to, I was talking a little bit also about like the romance, some of the re-editing he did. How do you feel about that in the two different versions?
Well, he felt he needed to modernize and simplify the film for reissue. I mean, you have to, I know it's offensive to think of things when you're talking about a great artist to think about money, but it was simply economics. The film market in 1942 required shorter films for the double bills that were then customary. It was a silent film. He needed product for United Artists. He had an agreement dating back to 1936 to put the Gold Rush back on the market. So he didn't want to overstay his welcome. So the idea was to shorten the film rather than lengthen it, and to, you know, move scenes around, and to simplify it, and to make it more straightforward. And as I said, more of a storybook fable rather than this great epic that he had wanted in 1925. He was a different man, different mm-hmm. phase in his career, different expectations from his public, and different desires for himself. Right. And it was his film, so he could do whatever he wanted with it. He was his own writer, director, mm-hmm. producer, actor. So if he wanted to put words in someone's mouth, they were originally his ideas to begin with.
Mm-hmm. So I think the most probably discussed change of anything is the ending, where he cuts the final kiss and just makes it kind of like a walk off into the distance, kind of like Modern Times. Mm. And I've always kind of been fascinated by that particular decision. Why do you think the motivation between specifically cutting the kiss was?
I go about this and explain it as best as I can. It's better mm-hmm. better than anyone has before in the commentary track I did for the Criterion Collection release. Basically, in 1925, part of his agenda was to make an autobiographical statement and to make lemonade out of the lemon of his shotgun marriage to Lita Gray, mm-hmm. and which had been in all the papers. So he had been married at the time of the release of The Gold Rush. So to end with him getting the girl so conspicuously, and in ending with that embrace, was part of the heroic story that he wanted to tell, that was somewhat autobiographical, because then Chaplin, of course, in private life had just gotten married and gotten the girl. And again, it publicized this marriage to Lita Gray. In 1942, he no longer needed any of this. He didn't need a heroic ending, which had a lot of personal baggage. And he just wanted a simpler ending. And the ambivalent ending was really more in keeping with, as you say, Modern Times or The Kid or City Lights or any of these endings that aren't, you know, cut and dry.
Right. No, I mean, that makes sense. And I honestly think it does work better without it. I mean, the kiss serves as like a nice, like, kind of button on the 1925 version that the 42 version's missing. But again, I feel like the 42 version handles the romance in like a straightforward, simpler, kind of sweeter way that I think works better for me.
Sweeter, and that's what he wanted for a storybook fable. But again, 1925, mm-hmm. an epic and heroic right. narrative, the hero must get the girl.
Right.
So again, it was a different agenda completely.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned The Kid and City Lights, and I'm curious why you think that Chaplin in 1942 deciding to go back to The Silence, why did he pick The Gold Rush to do first, do you think?
Oh, because it was his biggest moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, we have to go back to the follow the money, the economics of it.
Right.
And his United Artists partners, no doubt, wanted that film in particular because it had made the most money of all the silent films of the silent film era.
Mm-hmm.
So The Gold Rush would be the one that they would seek out. Plus, it was the most sophisticated. The Kid is going back 4 years previous to the Gold Rush, so the technology wasn't there in terms of it wasn't as beautifully photographed as The Gold Rush, so it mm-hmm. wouldn't and then the running speeds were different, so The Gold Rush would translate better as a reissued film than perhaps The Kid.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, that makes sense. So you've talked a lot about how it was highly motivated by money and by, you know, needing to put a new hit out for UA.
Well, all films are highly motivated by money. Sure. I don't want to single out The Gold Rush.
Yeah.
So I work in Hollywood, and yeah. It's all about the money.
Of course, totally. But the other interesting like aspects and sub-motivations that I've read for it, I find it especially fascinating as like an act of preservation. It's often been discussed how part of why The Gold Rush looks so good, the 25 reconstructed version we have, is because so much of it is using footage from this 42 version that, you know, the silent films that we do have that never got this kind of a re-release just don't look as good because the prints aren't as pristine.
Mm.
And I'm wondering how much you think this played into Chaplin's decision as well, his idea of, well, I want to keep this character alive, I want to keep this film alive. Do you think that was a key component at all?
Yes, Chaplin was cognizant of his own value always, and he was very much aware that other people were re-releasing and keeping in distribution his earlier film work, which he did not control. So he understood and saw that his old films had continuing value. So the films that he did control, he made great efforts to maintain and keep and preserve. Even when there wasn't any immediate financial gain, he just knew down the line that there would be a reissue of an earlier Chaplin film that he would have. So one day he would get to it. One day he would put music to it. And mm-hmm. The Gold Rush, yes, that was a good film to do at that particular time because there was so much outtakes, so many variant versions to go through, that it was a good thing that Raleigh Totherow, his cinematographer, was able to get on that and to try to basically reconstruct it, because by the time of the reissue, a lot of the negatives have worn out. I mean, this is in the photochemical age before digital technology, where you created a camera negative and you struck prints from it, and Chaplin films were the victim of their own popularity because these negatives would wear out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's interesting. So I want to kind of start to wrap up here, and I want to just go back to the film itself, because whichever version, it's like, it is so great. Watching both of them recently, the final whole sequence with the house on the edge of the cliff, it is still so suspenseful, and in both versions, I was, you know, literally on the edge of my seat, gasping. Like, it all really, really works. And I wanted to ask, like, what is your, if you can pick one moment or like a little detail, or what is your favorite thing about The Gold Rush?
What I love about The Gold Rush isn't any one thing. I love The Gold Rush because it seems to contain Chaplin's most celebrated comedy set pieces. And by that I'm thinking of the eating of the boot, the boiling mm-hmm. and eating of the boot, the dance of the rolls, and The Teetering Cabin. These are three fantastic Chaplin set pieces. But more mm-hmm. than that, it's because they're so well integrated into a character-driven narrative. That, to me, is the genius of The Gold Rush. And that's why I think, at least as a director's piece, I think it's the most outstanding film he ever made. As a comedy creator and as a director, I think that is his greatest work. There's a tremendous argument that could be made that City Lights is his best film. That was certainly his personal favorite of all his films, City Lights. But at the time of the release of The Gold Rush, he said, this is the picture I want to be remembered by.
And yeah, I mean, it's certainly the most iconic with those things like The Dance of the Rolls and The Eating of the Boot. Like, those are things that people who've never seen a Chaplin movie still, like, know about and have seen images of.
I think so. I agree with you, Wesley. So I feel one can only imagine the impact of The Gold Rush in 1925, because all of that was fresh. Mm-hmm. Think how diluted The Gold Rush has become, because animators and other comedy filmmakers have appropriated sequences. Right. So and they're still wonderful, because no one can replicate Chaplin's interpretation. But imagine how fresh The Gold Rush must have been in 1925.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it's like very well paced. It's just packed with all these little moments, both these big, big sequences that we remember it for, but all, like, you know, from the opening minutes, you see him walking along these cliffs and then a bear appears and it's hilarious from the very start. And it's similarly, like, the sweetness really does get to me. I particularly love when he's preparing the New Year's Eve dinner and he's going through so much care and, like, setting the table so nicely and wrapping all these gifts, and it makes the later, sadder part all the more affecting, because you really feel for him because you see him caring so much. It's really, really affecting.
I agree with you, and I remember as a graduate student being at Boston University, and one of my teachers was the novelist Saul Bellow, and the class was the modern novel. And I remember someone asked him about character development, and Saul Bellow said, "The greatest example I can think of character development isn't in a novel, but Chaplin's The Gold Rush." And that scene that you just cited, the one where he's preparing the dinner party for the girls that don't come, he thought that was the finest example of character development that he could think of off the top of his head, which I think is very interesting. I think it's a great work of art, The Gold Rush. It goes beyond a great film. It's a great work of art. And again, it's this great comedy set pieces, well-paced, but it's in this wonderfully... These set pieces are wonderfully integrated into this character-driven narrative. It's just an outstanding film.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think it's wonderful regardless which version that you watch. One thing I wanted to end on is an interesting story that I heard from... I was talking to a silent film accompanist, someone who plays live piano alongside silent films. Mm. And he was talking about many, many, many years ago when he was asked to perform alongside The Gold Rush. This was a long time ago, before certain regulations were put in place to use, like, a full live orchestra. But he shows up this early Saturday morning for, you know, a pretty small theater, mostly kids in the audience. And he sits down to start playing. And when the film comes on, he instantly realizes that it's the 1942 version, that they've turned off the sound, but it's not the 25 version with title cards. And he instantly realizes, oh, wait, what am I going to do here? Because they're not going to get what's going on. There's no narration. There's no title cards. There's nothing. It's just the images. But then he decided, you know what? No, this will be an interesting experiment. Let's see if the film can work without either of these, with just the images that Chaplin created. And so he plays the whole way through, and the film ends, and he stands up and turns to the audience and just says, "Thank you all for coming, and I wanted to ask, did anyone notice anything weird about the movie?" And no one in the audience, it was mostly children, none of them had seen the movie before or really knew anything about it, and so they all thought it was great. They didn't notice anything amiss. And so I think it's really telling that, you know, both these two versions, they have the title cards, they have the narration, but neither need it, because Chaplin's filmmaking is that strong. It stands alone just with the pure images and the characters and the movement. It all works that well.
Agreed, but I wouldn't want to put it to that test too often. I would rather see it played with his music or with his music and narration. Chaplin didn't like the idea of a lone piano. And most filmmakers of that time just hated the idea of a lone piano. I mean, that just seemed such like poverty to have a, to have just a lone piano. That certainly wasn't the way they were played in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. You usually had a combination of instruments, or like in the big cities, a symphony orchestra.
Right.
I think Chaplin films are like a ballet. So mm-hmm. you wouldn't have a rehearsal piano for Swan Lake. I mean, Chaplin's images require that big orchestra, the strings, the lushness of his music, I think really helps the films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for talking to me about the Gold Rush today. This has been a lot of fun and very interesting.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, Wesley.
Thanks again to Jeffrey Vance for coming on. Make sure to check out his book, Chaplin, Genius of the Cinema, as well as his other books on Buster Keaton, Harold Lloyd, and more. You can find our full story about the Gold Rush, along with many more articles about the Hollywood of 75 years ago, on our website, oldhollywoodtimes.com. Also there, you can find links to watch both versions of the Gold Rush. Both are streaming on Filmstruck, and are on Blu-ray, courtesy of the Criterion Collection. We're also on Twitter and Facebook at OH Times, and on Instagram at Old Hollywood Times.